Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And now, Hangar 56 Media presents Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast Spike Berenstain. Now, here's Spike.
Lucky enough to be invited to Justin Bell's funeral, this is what you're going to be listening to. And I know you've heard it before, so you might not want to go to his funeral if you are invited, but he just told me this is the song that we'll be playing at his funeral someday. I don't think you should back off it. Justin Bell is with us. Wait, hold on. Yeah, we should just do a music show. I could do a music show instead of a car show. Sitting in for Johnny Lieberman, Justin Bell, Zuckerman's here. We're going to do a show for you, quick one. You can't hear the music, but it's great. I'm definitely coming to your funeral. Okay. When do you plan on dying?
Not for a while, so you might not make it. But by then, maybe the song will be back in fashion.
It never stopped being in fashion.
You can check in, but you can never leave, right?
Oh, it's so good. You know, what I play Eagles in is in my Series 2A Land Rover. It really makes that car, and my old Volkswagen, the old Volkswagen Beetle. Anyway, hello to you all. Hope you're having a nice Wednesday. We've got a good show for you today. You just came from some sort of gathering, some Formula One gathering.
Well, seeing as Johnny is in Miami in person on a freebie with some watch company, I believe, I thought when I saw that Haggerty Garage and Social were having a little Formula One watch party 3 miles away, I thought we'll go and catch the start.
And I don't know anything that's happened. I've had a very busy Sunday morning. What can you tell us?
What can I tell you is that the race started with Max in the middle, which is something. Starting at the back is something he had to do recently, but that's different. You've got no one behind you. You can sort of plan your opening lap. When you start in the middle, you're about to be caught up in everyone's disaster. But he has just, like, dominated. I mean, so as we left, he was 2.2 seconds behind Sergio, and I don't think there's much chance of stopping him. So that was my prediction as we left.
You know, I was looking at the track this morning. You know, when you go to the Long Beach Grand Prix, which yeah. I was there, and I'm there every year, it's kind of hard to see the cars. Have you ever seen that Miami track? I haven't been out there yet.
Did they change
it so that you can see the cars going around the track? Didn't they design it specifically for this?
Very much so you can see. I mean, I don't know if poor people can see it, but people with money can see it from the hospitality.
Oh, no.
And I think poor people get the front straight.
Yeah.
So they can see the cars at 160, you know, or the start. But the hospitality, we were just saying, as you look over it, they've got, you know, people in swimming pools and stuff at the Hard Rock and cabanas, like they're having, you know, a normal you know, beach pool party looking down over the track, which does sum up the fact that no one really is probably there to watch the race in the VIP hospitalities. But
no, it's such an odd group of people. It's really become a thing. Celebrities down there.
All I know is that I had a chuckle. I was having a shower this morning thinking about doing this, thinking about Johnny being there and thinking how Johnny has that look, though.
Yeah.
As people walk by, because he has a little swagger, people think he's famous. Because in the same way, like a Seth Rogen is famous. No, because if someone's
Let me finish.
Let me finish. If you are in the pit lane at a Grand Prix, people expect you to be someone in the VIP areas. And Johnny has that sort of just kicked out of bed, maybe sleeping under a bridge look that only rich, famous people can actually pull off.
Right.
So I think in a Seth Rogen sort of way, people are probably walking by. He's probably got Shaq walking by and he just kind of gives a little hey. And Shaq's probably like, who was that guy? Do we know him? And so I think Johnny's being mistaken for someone who actually counts for something all day.
counts for nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I love the guy, but I think he's being mistaken for someone famous right now.
Look, he is the opposite of the sunglasses and the cap pulled down over your face, which is a way to disguise your celebrity. He, with the beard, is attracting attention, and they think he must be someone famous.
Totally.
But he's not actually not. But they give him a little more scrutiny, and then they go, well, who is that guy? And mm-hmm. Well, it's Johnny Lieberman.
Well, he's in here, right? So he must be okay.
Out for him.
Yeah, I know. So
they might think it's a Lord of the Rings thing, that maybe he's one of the dwarfs or
orc.
Orc. No, you're
well,
an
he
orc.
Also fits in my, an orc. He also fits Star Wars Cantina. He and I did a drive to the Arctic Circle in a big G wagon. Sort of fit in with the natives up there too. So
yeah.
You know, with a hat, you know, with a big furry, you know, winter coat on and all the beard and everything, he looked like he was a native up there too.
But not to keep digging in on Johnny. We love Johnny. He's our co.
Oh, we love Johnny.
But he's got a. I remember the first time that I saw him up at Pebble Beach, and I thought, that guy's a car journalist. Hmm? He doesn't have a car journalist look. Whatever I thought would be a car journalist, I might think of you. I might go, well, yeah, that guy looks like someone involved in racing and cars, but not Johnny, right? You just look and go.
Pastrami journalist, food journalist, booze journalist.
And thank God he never got asked to do Naked and Afraid. Because he could look perfect on that too.
But he's turning into something.
Right, he is.
Before our eyes. Yeah. Even with his unpressed beard. Props to Lewis Hamilton too, who was blasting Florida's Don't Say Gay bill by wearing a rainbow helmet in support of the LGBTQ community. How is he going to do today? I mean, I know we're prognosticating.
Dismal. It's dismal. If you hold the grid upside down, I think it looks better for him. He just complained he got hit by someone. I think they're just having a bad time. But Mercedes are getting faster. They're on the cusp of about to do something, but it isn't going to be this weekend.
And is this an exciting track to race in that can you make passes?
Verstappen is. I mean, there seems to be more passing there than at a lot of other street circuits. And obviously with the Vegas one in a few months, we don't know what that'll be like to overtake on until you actually do it. The tracks are designed by, there's so much science goes into the design of the track, but there's still topography you have to deal with, right? You can't change the strip.
Right.
You're going to turn right when it turns right and there's a certain radius of the corner. How fast they go before they get there and is there a little camber in the road and stuff, that can make the difference between a corner being good or great or mediocre. And it does seem like Miami, because in Florida you can do a bit more what you want, mm-hmm. especially around the Hard Rock there. It seems they've made a good track. Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Better than most. Better than most street tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll be exciting to see what happens today.
Can we go to Vegas?
Go to Vegas?
Yeah, for the race.
When is that?
Well, he just said in a few months.
October, yeah.
Is that the first time they've raced there?
First time.
Wow.
It is going to. Well, famous people like you will be able to go.
Like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I qualify.
No, but you'll still be
I'm with Lieberman on that one.
He'll be walking down the grid again. He'll be going, what? How did he get there? Yeah.
I would go to Las Vegas. It'd be easier to get us there.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
You want to go? You never want to go anywhere. Okay. I'll go if you want to go. That's
but it's
fine.
May, so I want to go in October. Now, as October gets closer, I won't want to go. But right now...
Oh, it's October.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right now it seems like a fine idea as I sit here in May.
Well, we have Pebble Beach, and then Ren Sport is a maybe.
Maybe.
Where would this fall on that list?
I would want to go to an F1. I would want to see the race. I'd want to see the hullabaloo around it. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Because you know, Miami gets a certain crowd of people, and I bet that's fantastic. That is fantastic to see. Vegas also will get, there will be different levels of gravy that are there.
I think you hit it on the head. The packages that they're selling go into the extraordinary, which has to be focused at people that really have no clue. Right, you would never pay to that much to have a suite. There was a thing at the Peterson the other day, and Zach Brown was getting honored, and he was being asked some questions about it. Really funny questions, like "What about Drive to Survive?" And he immediately said, "Yes, we don't like each other as much as it comes across on the show." It was kind of some fun, honest stuff. But he said, "People, he's met people who said, 'I've got a room for Vegas.'" And he's like, "Where?" "Well, I've got a room. I just looked on a map and I checked it out, and I can see the track." And he goes, "Oh no, you're going to suddenly wake up in that morning. There's going to be a 200-foot banner in front of your room. If you're not paying to play there, you're not going to see anything."
Really?
Yeah.
See, that here's what I couldn't tell processing this whole weekend through Instagram was, were people going for the events surrounding the race, or are they going for the race? Like Marsden's there with the IWC, which is fun, and they're a great watch company. But there was an IWC basketball game, and then there seemed to be a lot of great parties, and it seemed like they were going for some idea of 60s and 70s Formula One glamour, trying to connect to something. Do you think it's there? I guess it is, right? I mean, are the events the reason?
They are so...
Or is the race that fun to sit and watch, or could you enjoy it more at home?
Always enjoy it more at home, right? I mean, without doubt. You should put my feet up. You put your AC on or whatever. No,
The TV keeps track of everything perfectly.
Way better.
And I find when I'm at a race, I'm staring at a TV.
You come in out of the hospitality suite. Yeah. You're on a balcony, and you go, "Okay, that start was great. Let's go and watch it on the TV."
Yeah.
And you kind of pop out. I mean, I think and this is where Formula One are doing a spectacular job, and all the promoters is the, what they call activation with all these brands like IWC everyone. They are activating on steroids. So there's beach parties and pool parties. I mean, I think Lando Norris was with the Miami Heat throwing, balls the other day. I mean, every single opportunity is being taken up. So I think people go for the parties. They've got fake boats there, in fake water. They've got fake people, obviously,
very
fake
people.
Boobs swimming in fake, in
fake beards, fake Mr. Beards. Lieberman.
Yes.
Yes.
But having so much fun. And then the race starts. And this is, I actually do honestly think this Drive to Survive was so extraordinary for bringing people in for the culture. And it was the missing link has always been race promoters and race series are like, our racing so strong, you've got to love it for that. Which is why it's always stayed as a slightly small sport here in the States. Right. Now we've fallen in love with the player, with the sex and the Gunther Steiner being so, saying fuck every 2 seconds. It's all kind of, we're like, wow, this is great. But when the green flag goes, when that last red light goes off, you've actually still got a serious motor race to go through, and they're not always exciting.
Right.
Unless you're a real fan.
Right.
I bet there's a huge drop off in viewership. Everyone's like, Drive to Survive, this is great. And then about 10 minutes in, they go, what, they're saving tires? What does that mean? Why is no one overtaking each other? And why is that car cleared off?
Yeah.
5 miles in the distance.
It works. My wife sat through a whole Indy race last year.
Whoa.
She stayed right till the end. So did the kids, just because of that series.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. But for fans listening, to be honest, if you're someone that's never been to a Formula One race, I would say go to Austin.
Oh, yeah.
And you can watch a real racetrack. I mean, I'm involved with the Vegas thing, so I'm heavily pushing that. But, if you've got your money and you're going to take your son or daughter and you want to go to a race, you go to Austin to see Formula One, because it's a proper racetrack, right?
You can
walk around and see the cars miles away. So I've got a friend who has gone to Austin, the British Grand Prix, and another one in Europe, Spa or something, for the same price as going to Miami.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go, right?
See, it seems like it's about a weekend, a travel weekend. Mm-hmm. Just saying Austin, you're like, go for the weekend.
Yeah.
So you can say you were there.
Visit my nephew. Go to a few restaurants. Go see some music. Go see a race. What are you doing with the Vegas group? Like, what have they asked you to do?
Well, so involved with the Wynn. The Wynn Casino actually launching next week is called Drive to Wynn, which is a little podcast I'm doing with them about Formula One. Yeah, starting next week. Yeah.
Are you doing it from the Wynn?
Doing it from their new schmancy podcast.
Well, this
studio.
Is where we're staying.
You're staying with me. Yeah.
He's going to bring us in. We're going to do Spike's Car Radio from
right there.
We're going to promote all their shit.
I think we just made a deal.
We just made a deal. I would do that.
Very courteous. Yes. Thank you.
You should see. There we are. We might have air mattresses. down the side of the studio, but it's pretty cool. Yeah. So I'm very excited about it. It's a really good opportunity for me.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about too while I had you here because you raced Le Mans a lot, Le Mans, in the 90s, and that is top of mind here with the anniversary of the race. The 75th anniversary of Porsche and Toyota and Cadillac and Porsche, all who really want to win this year.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you just tell me first, like, what is it about that race? What is it about Le Mans for you that really makes it stand out as one of the, you know, the races?
You mentioned earlier, like, Formula One, that nostalgia for the James Hunt sort of 70s and everything. Don't we all want to get out of a race car and smoke cigarettes and, you know, chase pretty girls and risk our lives and live? That's what racing was, right? And that's why probably most people still try and do it. But Le Mans, with that 100th centenary this year, it also has captured the imagination every decade of that 100 years because it represented the cars for the most part that people could drive.
Right.
So I think that's from that, you know, sitting here right near a 300 SL, they race there, right? I mean, you've got these amazing drivers in history also who came from Formula One. There was no delineation between driving. Sterling Moss would do Le Mans, and then next weekend you do the British Grand Prix. You know, that's kind of how it went. Right. So fans have known it's in the middle of June every year for 100 years. And it's like in the lifeblood, 70,000 to 80,000 British people make the journey every year. It's a pilgrimage. They get there. You can't even get a ferry booking. And
you're camping.
You're camping.
There are campgrounds around the track.
Oh.
And this year, I was checking it out the other day. It's like these custom-built mini homes, and then you get tent level. Everything's sold out. Everything's done.
This is the first one that's ever been sold out, Spike, ever.
Yeah.
This year.
Well, this is the one, right?
Yeah.
But it's like you'll see a bunch of tents, a bunch of cool collector cars, a lot of barbecue, a lot of beer, a lot more beer. I mean, it's a really amazing thing to see. It's really like the Coachella for gearheads.
The Burning Man.
The Burning Man. I did a thing when I was doing the TV there after I finished racing, and then I did TV there for 15 years, and I was sort of the one that used to go out and meet the fans.
Right,
and do these
features. Jump out and chat.
And as you drive in, you see, I did a feature that you see the Dutch and the German campgrounds. So I said to my producer, I've got to do this feature. I started it in the Dutch one, and I was like, or the German one. I said, these tents, they have got like geolocators on the top of them. I think from satellite, everything was perfect. The Germans are standing there with the towel rolled up in the morning, you know, all lined up to go to the toilet and have a shower.
So it is orderly.
Perfect. Then you go to the Dutch ones and there's a little bit that they're organized. And Tom Christensen's brother is the biggest tour operator at Le Mans for Holland. And literally, as I said, one of the years Tom was there, I said, this is the time to invade, you know, his country, because everyone's here. I mean, everybody's here. And it's just amazing. And then I said, so again, the camping's so organized. It's brilliant. Then you get to the British campground.
Your people.
And it's like, as I said on air, the camping gods just took a shit. And out came all the tents. And they're lying. There's English guys holding on to someone else's tent, having a pee. And, you know, I mean, you go, these are my people. This is. But with Jags, Mercedes, Ferraris, Porsches, I mean, it's all people that do well,
yeah.
but But
laying
camping,
on the grass,
degenerate. Your people degenerate once country.
Well, that would be the Americans too, don't you think?
No, the British are way worse over there. They drink so much beer and booze.
Yeah.
And they're not good in the sun.
They don't
do well in the sun. It's like you go to Corfu or something and you see them broiled, third degree burns, and they're still drinking on the beach.
Lobsters. Yes. They're the same. But back to your question, Le Mans. It is an epic week that you go for. And 24 hours, you know, it isn't just 24 hours because you get up in the morning 8 hours before it even starts, right? So it is a very long day. And the pageantry and just 400,000 people in one spot, it's massive. I think the different type multi-class racing really works there because you have these incredible prototypes. Mm-hmm. This year's going to be better than ever. And you have GT cars, which was my thing. And, you know, the Corvette guy's going, I could drive that. The Viper guy's going, I could drive that. Or I have one. So it really brings people in and it's an ordeal to finish. If you just pass the finish line, you know, you're like overly emotional. You know, when you've been up too long and someone can say something, you're like, I love you, man. And, you know, you're all tears running down your face. But then you go, if you win it or you get on the podium, I mean, it's hard to keep yourself together.
And how many times have you done it? 9 or 10 times?
I've done 10 times. The first one was in a Ferrari engine Spice. I don't count, which just went once down the straight like a rocket. But the others were real. Yeah, but I first went when I was 4 months old. So
4 months?
Yeah, so
you
I
don't
went
remember
a lot.
That, though.
No.
But you have a picture, maybe.
I have pictures, yeah.
How many times have you finished?
Like 8. Yeah. I did really well. I mean, 3 podiums. So it was, and won it in 98. So
that's amazing.
But, wow.
What are some of the stranger things that have happened to you during the race in the race car?
The stranger things that have happened are...
Unexpected... curveballs, I call them, when I perform or when I have to be in front of a... There's always something weird that happens. What?
Always. You know, some of it involves your pre-nerves when you haven't done it very much. A bit like doing Indy, I've heard. You know, it's a long month, you get nervous. When you've done it a few times, you know how to pace yourself. I was at Le Mans the night before the race. I was so worried about not being there in time for my driver change. And, you know, you have someone comes and knocks on the caravan door, but I didn't really take that into factor. My dream was that I was in the middle of the night. I thought, oh, I'm going to go and check on the pit stop. This is a full dream. Go out. And as I go in, this orange, it was a 962 Porsche, orange ADA Porsche. The car was up on the jacks and the door was open and the team were turning around going, you're next. And I looked down and I'm in purple pajamas with pink fluffy slippers on in my dream. And I'm going, no, I didn't sleep for 24 hours. As soon as I got out of the car, I put my race suit on. I didn't sleep. Got better. Other things is, you know, peeing in the seats. You do a lot of, you know, you get out and you just have to go, oh my God, Andy Wallace, my teammate. I was like, Andy, I went in the motorhome, he wasn't in the car. I said, Andy, you keep peeing in the seat. He said, it's not piss, mate. It's water. I said, it's water to you. I said, it's pee to me. I said, you know, just stuff. Friends of mine who came from New York on a trip, coked out of their head at 3 in the morning, thinking it's funny to steal my helmet and wear it and run down the pit lane. And I'm going, no.
How far away from pit lane are you in those moments? I mean,
well, the garage opens onto pit lane.
Right, and you're sleeping in the garage.
No, we're behind.
Is it even quiet enough to sleep?
No, you go out of the paddock, which is a lot better now than it was.
Right.
You used to go, and on the old pits, the toilet system, you know, it's a bit backward there, and they had a gravel drainage ditch behind the paddock, behind the pits, and that's where you'd go. Everyone would go there. So it was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Very quickly. And then you sleep in a caravan. Those were my dad's days. Now you have a compound, like you mentioned, you know, the Toyota and everyone, they have cabins they make, and that's where the, you know, set up drivers all sleep in those. But you can hear it all night. You lie there and you can hear the French commentator. I can hear it right now. And he's, you know, voiture 53, Le Viper, and you go, oh, it's my car. You know, so you're always listening out for that. It's just great, man. It's just great.
It's wild. You know, back in the old days, you know, I think before they ruled out the amount of time a driver could drive, wasn't there a fella in the 50s?
He went all the way.
He went 23 plus hours, and his son did 2 laps while he ate and went to the bathroom. He took two bathroom food breaks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally he did. They stopped.
What do you think he was taking?
Yeah, I know. He needed
a couple of pills.
Yeah. Yeah, and he won.
Yeah, he was slightly. What was the guy? He won his closet.
Something but, Louis or some. Yeah. Yeah, it's an. That's an amazing story.
They limit you now on drive time.
Right.
What are the rules on that?
Well, I think you're no more than 3 hours in a row, which is easy to get to, or because if you're out and with tire fuel, is it about 45, 50 minutes? And you know how you double, triple stint these Michelins half the
right,
time.
Right, right. But isn't it about fuel?
It's
tanks?
Fuel is 50.
It's fuel. It's like fuel, you're going to do one tank or two tanks.
One tank. And then what happens is if you get a full course yellow, you know, in the middle of your second stint, then they'll sometimes just want to put fuel and keep you out.
Right,
so I think it might be 4 hours on the driver because three is too easy to hit. But you can't do multiples of those. And but you have a deal with, imagine it's the three of us driving. We'd be going, okay, so we're going to do doubles in the day and triples at night.
Right.
Aren't we? And we look at each other because I'm not going to give you 3 hours in bed.
Right.
And then you jip me and come out after 2 hours, right? So you try and negotiate a bit, but in the end, it also depends on who's running fast.
I couldn't sleep, Zuckerman. Would you be able to sleep?
No,
there's no sleep for me.
Maybe if I'm number seven or eight, where you're an old hand at it, but the first time, second, there's no way you could sleep.
Forget it.
If you podium, now you're probably still exhausted, even if you've got these shifts.
Yeah.
But what happens if you podium or win? Where do you go after that? What do you do?
Because you really want to have a good time.
Right? No.
But
do your Coke friends come out of the woodwork?
Well, you're looking for them.
Yes.
You're looking for them quite hard. Yeah. what's funny is you go up on the podium, the whole process is quite frantically done towards the end of the day. They don't hang around. I mean, you get up there but all the classes. And when we, Dad and I finished third in the McLaren, we're up there and it's a sea of humanity, filling the pit lane. And they were like, and there's, as I said, a lot of British people, and they're shouting his name, chanting. I'm hearing Justin Bell, but it's really Derek Bell, right? And so I'm hearing the Bell part.
Maybe they're just hearing your middle name.
I'm just hearing the middle. Exactly. And well noticed. And Dad said, you should breathe, enjoy it. So I stood, put my hands on the railing at the front. It's like, wow. And the power and energy of it. And at that point, I've said it ever since then, I now get why someone wants to be a dictator.
Right. 'Cause
that is some heady shit. I mean, you're there and it's wild. But then, you go off and there's lots of people wanting, if you're with a manufacturer, there's obligations and stuff.
Right, right.
But there are some memorable moments, such as we went to the Audi hospitality. This is years ago when we were doing TV. And they'd just beaten Peugeot, and the Peugeot guys suddenly, in the middle of the, everyone's overtired and getting drunk and dancing, the Peugeot guys started walking in the hospitality. They'd been invited by the other mechanics, and it was like this, United Nations moment, mm-hmm. and it was really emotional. Again, you're blubbering like a baby because you're too, you're so emotional and tired. But and then you drive, you come back to the hotel, but the noise is what sticks with you
mm-hmm.
in your ears, the ringing in your ears of of the especially in those big front engine GT cars.
Yeah,
the prototypes, you don't hear it.
That just even happens if you go to the race.
You does right.
You're just hearing it ringing 24 hours night. Later. Yeah.
Yeah. You drive home a little too fast. I did get told that a few times. Like I'm in my Jeep Cherokee when I was with Dodge going, and then my friend's like, it's all right, the race is over. I'm like, well, because your eyes are conditioned right to going faster. So yeah, it's a great race.
We have Johnny and I have a standing bet about Le Mans this year, about Porsche and Cadillac, even though I'm starting to think Toyota might be the one that might take it. Where do you think we're at with those cars? I mean, I know it's hard to guess, and where did they just race? It's Spa?
At Spa, yeah.
And the Toyotas took first and second, yes. I think, followed by Porsche, Ferrari, Porsche maybe?
I like the Ferrari.
Did I get that right?
Yeah,
but as we head to Le Mans in this race that everyone wants to win and everybody has their reasons to win, is there any way to prognosticate that or guess? I mean, who do you think is running the best right now? I'd heard tough. From someone I know who's a racer who said he thought Toyota was the one to beat this year. And then at Spa, they take one and two.
Toyota's history at Le Mans has been so... such a tough road, right? I was in the pit lane doing the thing for Fox Sports when they were like, oh, they got two laps to go. Make sure you go down there and get your interview. Arika are the ones, running that, who I raced with in Viper. So I knew everybody there. And I'm standing next to Hugh Deshonak, who was my old boss. And Mr. Toyota is standing there in the garage, which is a pretty big deal. And the car stopped, if you remember, on pit lane. It broke down with one lap to go. And he just turned around. Everyone's staring at him. And he walks out. But you know there's people on swords, right? There's people throwing themselves all the way through the garage. Literal seppuku all the way down the garage. And there was nothing. And they said, get an interview. I'm like, not a chance. I'm not going in that garage. So we worked out they'd spend about $1.5 to $2 billion trying to win Le Mans.
Right.
Over 20 years.
Right.
And then they did the next year. So Toyota's commitment to Le Mans and what it means in Japan is obviously staggering. Porsche have to win it, right? They come in. They don't mess around at Le Mans. They've got all the best drivers
in their car. They've got 19 wins total. Yeah. They're the number one winning manufacturer, followed by Audi, who I think is 13.
I think it is, yeah.
Ferrari, 7. Ferrari's 10.
But,
is that right?
But
Jaguar, 7.
Not recently.
Ford, 4.
Right.
Yeah.
And those are the top four. But Porsche more than anyone. 19 wins in 6 key races. Yeah. But in 98 when they won with the GT1, that was their 50th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah.
And now here we are at 75. Yeah. So, you know, that...
A lot of pressure to win.
Do you think that pressure translates into a bigger budget, which then would give them a better shot at winning?
That's what it does. It doesn't make the team work any harder or the drivers go any faster, but the budgets do increase, I think.
They do.
We're in for such a showdown, I think, because... This convergence of regulations has meant that you can have American teams going. You know, not that we really are, but it's quite extraordinary they're going to do that. I think they've got the best drivers in the world every car has got the best drivers in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you can't count the Ferrari out. And I personally kind of, even though I'm like Porsche so much, who wouldn't want a Ferrari to win Le Mans?
I haven't seen that car, but it's the 499.
Photographs. Beautiful.
It's 499, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
And what is it? It looks like just these others.
It looks like the others, but it's just got a little thing going. You know, got a little allowed to in the rules, like the Cadillac. You know, they could make certain design cues that make you go, oh, that's, that's it. And Cadillac spent a lot of time and money on making theirs look the way, and, you know, Porsche did too. I mean, the BMW is stunning, you know? I think it's going to be really good.
It's a good race, right? Yeah. But I'm excited about it.
Yeah, you've got to beat Le Mans to win it, though, right? You've got to beat the track. Before you can beat anyone else, and so much can go wrong. And the problem is that the differences between gentlemen and pro drivers is exaggerated at Le Mans. Whereas, because some of the corners are so fast, if you come up on a GT car in the Porsche curves, you know, in a prototype, they're just literally lifting, going down a gear and going in flat. In a GT car, it's rum, 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 you know, you kind of turn in and you wallow through the corners.
Right.
These things are, they're full-blown Formula cars. They're, you know, right, not far off Formula One. And if you've got a driver that is out of his depth a little bit, and there's a lot of those there, that can mean a big difference.
Do you ever get in the car and go around the track anymore?
No. I mean, only historic stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like we all get asked to drive nice cars and things. For me, the minute I got the chance to start doing the TV thing and I realized I was never going to get hired by a factory again, and I was driving Daytona prototypes with a really nice rich guy, you know, I get it into the top five. He'd drop to 15th. I get in the top five. He'd crash. I get a check. I go home and I think, is this what it's all come to?
You know? Doesn't sound terrible, though.
No, it was fine until. Yeah. But then he broke his leg skiing after Daytona.
No. Oh, no.
And badly. And it meant I could go to Speed Channel and say, I can do this now. Because they know racing, if you're trying to get in the TV world and broadcasting world and you're still trying to race, they know you're going to drop everything to go and race.
Right.
It's too much of a drive.
Yes.
And they know that. So they don't really hire you.
Yeah.
Other than
yeah.
one-offs.
That's
until
right.
you say, I'm done.
Exactly.
You have to really prove it. You're done.
Yes.
But we I'd do that Trans Am series. You know, I got friends doing that. That was, you know, something like that. I'd do Daytona again. But Le Mans, those guys, I mean, you have to be so fit.
Yeah.
It's a bit boring.
Yeah.
They do triathlons and.
What was your favorite snack during the race?
I'd like pasta. I just really? Had pasta. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Pasta.
I'm thinking
pasta.
Applesauce.
Pasta with applesauce. No, you have pasta and bananas because, you know, they would feed, they'd make sure you all read the right, eat the right things. And then I'd just, but if there was cat chocolate around, you know, I'm a bit.
Cat chocolate. And pasta.
And so they give you all the right food and drinks, then you're going to have candy and undo everything. But
yeah, yeah.
They weren't as strict. I mean, my last Petit Le Mans was 2013. And that was the last time I really got fit to go racing. And I realized it is hard work. Because all the young kids, they're all so differently conditioned now.
Yep,
and
unbreakable.
They all do simulators all the time.
Yes.
You know, our version of simulators, you get a bike or you'd walk around the track. I ran Le Mans the first time. You know, it was a stupid mistake. But, you know.
Why? Why is it a stupid mistake?
Because I forgot how long it was. I forgot I'd never run 14K. And so I'm like halfway around going, I did get a good look at the track.
But, yeah.
You know, walking the track was a really good thing to do. Because, you know, you could see the tarmac, you see the grass, you see the, and you go, oh, shit, that's gravel there. I don't want to go off there.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you walk it? I mean, I know it's mostly public roads, yeah. Right? But they weren't shut down at that point.
No,
so
no. You always like go down the side, or, you know. But once you get to the Bugatti circuit, you know, and you can do the full thing.
Do you walk regular tracks? Is there a moment where they let you do that?
Yeah,
I've never had that ability.
Oh yeah, if Long Beach on the Thursday afternoon, you see all the IndyCar drivers and everyone walking around it.
Oh, that's
especially
cool.
A street track. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be a good idea for your podcast.
Yeah.
Literally park up. We did it with Tommy and Kendall.
I want to go.
I
want to get with them. I want to walk with them and listen to what.
Hear what they're saying.
Yeah, you just literally park up in the car and have a wander around with them. It's actually a great thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's really interesting. So what are you going to predict? Are you going to make a prediction about Le Mans? What would you say? How about you just comment on my bet with Johnny? I'm taking Porsche all the way. He's taking Cadillac. In whatever position the Porsche cars will be above the Cadillac car. Plural or singular? Do you care to comment on that?
I think that, oh, he's good with Cadillac, though, because they are really good right now.
And Scott Dixon.
Scott Dixon.
Who's the greatest?
I think I'm going to say Ferrari's going to beat both of you.
Okay, that's politics.
Okay.
And then on your bet, I think it will be split. I reckon it'll be Porsche, Cadillac.
But a Porsche on top of Cadillac.
I do think so.
Yeah.
I think that.
They're not going to let this opportunity go by.
No. Not in this year.
And they'll open the money spigot.
Yeah.
And they'll just go. They'll go for it.
Do you know much about that Garage 56?
No.
It's the NASCAR that's going with Jenson Button,
right?
Rockefeller and a NASCAR driver.
So
yeah, Jimmy Johnson.
In 1976, people weren't showing up for that race anymore, and they didn't have a lot of entries. So they entered NASCARs for the first and only year into the endurance race.
Yeah,
care to comment on how many finished? Anybody? I think it's pretty obvious.
I'd say none.
Zero.
Yeah.
None of them finished, but a spectacular couple of laps.
Very memorable.
Memorable noise.
Nice.
And this is the first return of a NASCAR.
Yeah, it is.
But what's different about this car?
Well,
I mean, it can't be a
It's not a NASCAR. No, I mean, it is a NASCAR. But Hendrix Motorsport, obviously the best guys to do this. And IMSA, John Doonan and IMSA's, you know, spearheading it. And it's a Jim France project, you know, who owns NASCAR. So there's no budget. You know, the budget is not an issue. There's no rules to conform to, really. You conform to your own set of rules. But because it is based on a NASCAR chassis, and I saw the car at Daytona, it looks just badass. I mean, it looks like NASCAR with more juice, bigger, flared wheel arches. But they have some interesting issues because I interviewed Jenson Button before I knew he was doing it. Well, before he could announce it, like the week before. But he told me that, you know, they have things like if in NASCAR you use floor jacks. So Le Mans were like, well, you're going to use floor jacks to lift the car up for 24 hours. You know, not, you know, and up it goes. Yeah. But to run a car at Le Mans, you have to run it low. You know, you can't run it with that ride height. You've got to run it down. You can't get a jack underneath.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they've come up with, but you know the guys at Hendrix will work out a super flat, low-profile jack that, you know, can lift the whole car up on one guy.
So they may have to design a new jack for the race.
I'm more interested in the jack than I am what they're actually going to do because I don't know how they're going to do it. I think, are they making them? No, they've got a center lock wheel. I think that was an allowance. But listening to them all in testing, and you know, on Instagram again, most of the time we get our information. I mean, Sebring 4-day tests they did, and just through the night trying to do it, and it's thunderous. Yeah,
and it does it look like a NASCAR?
Oh yeah, it looks like a NASCAR.
It just looks like a NASCAR.
Just looks like a NASCAR.
And what is the engine? Do we?
Oh,
know?
It's just that whatever big Chevy V8.
Yeah,
massive. You know, I mean, tuned for Le Mans, which is probably down tuned, right?
And, from NASCAR. And why?
Well, because
what is the
you
big
can.
Why here?
Jim France wants to showcase. I guess unofficially, NASCAR needs Europe as a market.
Yeah,
this is a good way to do it,
right?
Wouldn't you think? I mean, that's probably it.
You want to open up their audience?
Yeah,
a little
open
bit.
Up the audience, and this is a good way to do it,
right?
And it doesn't matter where it finishes. I mean, they'll finish, maybe. You know, I mean,
it's
going to be
thing.
Thunderous and fast on the street, but so slow when you get to the Porsche curves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No way.
I'm still thinking endurance. Is it going to last? Can it last 24 hours?
No.
That motor.
I don't know. I mean,
that had to be their very first consideration, given the history from the 70s, albeit. But still, you'd go, this is an endurance race. Right, you want the Hans Mesker engine there. It's famous for winning races and endurance and lasting a long time.
I think that, but with Hendrix and the money that they're putting at it, I think they're probably all pretty focused on. Again, you can't overcome the natural technology, but I think there's a lot of effort going to it. I mean, a lot more than
again.
Probably
what,
was back
a,
in
what
the,
a race! I think I'm more excited about this race than I've ever been.
Yeah.
And you've never been in this race, right, Zuckerman?
No.
You would fit right
You'd
in.
You'd really enjoy it.
Yeah.
You go stay with the British in their tents.
Yeah.
When he said he had a hand up taking a pee, that reminded
that
me of you.
That sounds perfect for me.
It is. But a lot of people. You know, there's tours that go. We got asked the other day by someone, can you get tickets? It's sold out.
It's totally sold out.
It's going to be great.
I went one year with Jerry. We just wanted to go see what it was about, and I think drove from Paris or something, and it was fantastic. What a fantastic thing it was!
Where'd you stay?
In Paris.
But we
were on different trips, and we met up there. I think that was the only kind of the 2 days that we were around the same part of the country. So we met at Le Mans, left the girls in Paris, and then came back that night. Went back to Paris. Memorable, fun,
fantastic.
Yeah,
okay.
Stayed
we
as late as
we
could.
We
and
die.
I said, "I'm not sleeping on the grass, so let's get out of here."
You that was such a great. I bet you two had a good time. That was so funny. You know, it's so
well.
Good.
It was. It didn't seem as crazy as it was back then. But I just remember all the great memorabilia. There was a Grand Prix of Cuba poster being sold. Who's the famous driver who was kidnapped? In Cuba in the 50s, and they didn't Manuel Fangio.
Oh yeah, wow!
And this guy has like 200 posters signed by Manuel, and a picture of him signing the posters. And he's like, "Yeah, these are $20." I'm like, "What? Give me a couple of those." You know, there was just a bunch of great memorabilia and a bunch of great stuff, and nobody knew who the hell we were. And it was just, you know, just wandering around, seeing this legendary thing that we'd only heard about, you know, and really fun to connect to it. Next is Monaco. That's the one I haven't seen yet. So. Mm. Have you been to that race?
Yeah, but not 20 years ago. My sister lives down in the south of France, so she was in the wine business. So they used to put wine to all the yachts and stuff. And I mean, Monaco is... You can't compare it as a street race to going to Vegas or Miami, right? It's because it's so old and everybody really... There's such history there, but... I think everyone has to go to Monaco once because it's just like it's going to the Indy 500. You got to go to the Indy 500 sometime.
Well, that's the triple crown of racing, right?
Yeah.
Le Mans, the Indy 500, and Monaco. Mm. Those three.
Ferrison, let's put it on the list. Something to accomplish within the next 5 years.
It's embarrassing that we haven't been to the Indy 500 at this point.
It is, actually.
It is.
I've got to say.
I feel embarrassed, but okay.
I do. I get invited. I get invited a lot. And then
okay, let's
I just,
go. But I'm not embarrassed.
Well, next time someone invites us, I'll say yes. And
okay.
And then we can go.
I mean, it just doesn't have... I mean, the Indy 500 has this wonderful ring to it. Indy, Anna, doesn't have the same. It's like going into Monaco, Miami, or Vegas, right. or Indiana.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
it doesn't get your wife all excited to take the trip, right?
Yes.
But the Indy 500 is spectacular. I went with Chip Ganassi the last time I went, and you know, you get the police escort, and you go in, and it was pretty amazing to see that mass of humanity.
Yeah.
I tried to qualify there in 96 with when IRL started, and that put me off that forever. It was a disaster, but
it's scary too, right?
So scary
because of the wall.
And if you're in a bad car, like I was, and I couldn't even get through rookie orientation because the car kept on getting black flagged. There's a big digital board on the back straight, like a black flag board. Number 15 kept on coming out. I'd come in, and it was raining in between times, so you're getting more and more nervous. And you know, the scrutineers would be by the back of the car, and I could hear them going, oil, whoa, oil mark, water, you know, on the tires. I'm going, this is not good for my confidence. And Johnny Rutherford came to me and he said, the Johnny Rutherford, who was like my mentor there, you get assigned one. And he said, if you don't leave, you might not walk out of here. I was like, I'm done. And then
that's a really confident booster. That was really,
But think about this. I'd never done this
maybe
before.
Maybe he saved your life that day.
Maybe he did. I, Spike, will wake up in the morning and put my wash bag all nice and neat and make sure there's no dirty undies on the floor or anything because I wasn't sure I was coming back.
Wow.
That every morning I did that. And then it was time to go. Yeah, it was not a good experience.
Did you have a choice as a child? With a race car driver as a dad, was there ever a moment where you just thought maybe I should do something differently?
Go to law school,
or was not happening.
Or your dad, did he ever sit you down and go, "Hey, you know, I know this is cool and it must be something to look at, but I don't want you to do this."
They avoided it, my parents, pretty well. As in, we never had to have that talk. It just was like steering me away from it. I never drove go-kart, but we lived on edge of my grandpa's farm. So I rode motorbikes. Then I started racing motocross. So I was getting that side from that. I never touched a go-kart. I think they thought it was so much safer, not physically safer at that point, but safer as a career direction because they knew I'd never be a motocross rider. And then when I was 17, I went to the Formula Ford Festival just before I was 17. And I'd never seen young people drive cars. Just think about this. Is how weird this is. I'd never seen how you got started. So I just saw Dad at Le Mans or Silverstone or Miami Grand Prix. So this sounds really ignorant, but I didn't know how young people got into it. And I went with my buddy and his dad, and I came home and went, "Dad, I want to have a go. I just saw people my age." And he was like, "Shit, how do we tell your mom?" And
so he was supportive.
He was supportive.
But he knew your mom didn't want to have...
That was an era when they died all the time. People were dying so much in the, you know...
And so what did you do? How did you tell your mom?
Well, she just said, "You got to go to college as well." So I started art college, which was the only thing I was good at was art.
But she was fingers crossed.
She was fingers crossed it wasn't going to be a phase. And you only want it for the, you know, you're telling an 17 year old, you just want to do this because of all the loose girls and the money. And, and I'm going, exactly. Yes. I don't know what you're talking about, Mum. The careers officer was telling me I should work for the council.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the same. So I thought I was going to be an entertainer. You know, I wanted to like be an actor. I wanted to be something. I really wanted to be, so again, nothing a careers guidance person can help you with at school. But when I saw them drive, and then Dad was like, "Well, to go to the Jim Russell school, it was like £580. He said, "Well, you got to work on the farm all summer to pay for it." I was like, "Oh, shit. All right." So I did that. And then I drove the Formula Ford. Then I was really hooked.
Wow.
And
now, the farm was his farm.
It was like my grandpa's farm.
So you got to work on grandpa's farm doing...
Well, my grandpa had a market garden, so I was picking potatoes most of the summer. And I
how many girls do you get picking potatoes?
Do you know... My point exactly. So as soon as I could... And then college, I start doing college, which is the same time. It was like a related arts course. Totally... useless, really. You know, it was a bit like Fame, but I was on the doing an art major, and there were dancers and actors and musicians, all so talented. And our only day of lectures was a Wednesday, which was also the only day of open testing at Brands Hatch. You know where I'm going to go right there.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got pulled aside at the end of the year, and they said, by my tutor, you're going to get thrown out if you don't take this seriously. I said, hand on heart, I'm going to do this seriously. I went home, got my first sponsor over the Christmas break. You know how local news covers these things? There's me the day before college restarted in January going, hand on heart, I'm going to be a race car driver. So I went in. This teacher said, you're coming with me to the dean. You're out of here. I get in there. This old guy pulls me in. And Dad was kind of well known in our area. And he goes, so, Bell, I hear you want to be a race driver. I was like, yeah, I do. And he said, well, who the hell wants to be a related artist anyway? He said, please stay because there's no boys on your course. We need every guy. So you can still stay and go to the parties and go and do your racing. So I did that for a year. Yeah.
Look at that. God bless teachers. God bless teachers.
And how long did it take you from that moment, you're 17 or 18, to really start accomplishing something?
My first Le Mans was when I was 22. And that was with Dad in the first real Le Mans. 21. I went with that Ferrari, but the 22 was at the end of the 962 era, and driving a 962 with Dad after all the races he won and Andy Wallace was very cool. I was already racing in America by then because I saw America as a better option. I did the Barber Saab series and won that, and you know, you don't really make money, but you're not losing money. Do you know what I mean? You're getting a little pocket money,
right?
And in America, they would pay Barber Saab, they'd pay $8,500 for a win, and it costs you $5,500 to do the race. So if you won, you could make money. So that was kind of
way. But back to the 962. Was Mom there to see you guys?
Do you know what? She didn't turn up there because my dad had just kind of announced to everyone he had a quite a long affair with a 20-year-old American. So my mom wasn't so hot on racing at the time.
That was a problem?
So do you know what? I've got to thank Dad for that because that took Mom's scrutiny off and she moved to South Africa. And, you know, we love her dearly, but she disappeared off and it took that pressure off. I've never said that publicly, but yeah, took my mom's pressure, which was just her husband having not died doing it. You don't want your son to, you know, but when I say not died, everyone else around him, you know, 7 people a year to 10 people of your classmates would die in the 70s.
That's
a
rough.
A lot of people.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah.
And that's terrible for her. I mean, to be thinking about that.
Yeah. You know. Awful. But back to my dad. They're married. They've been married 30 years and it's the best thing that happened.
There you go.
Yeah, there you are.
The 20-year-old.
She's just a bit older than me, maybe 25.
Oh, Zuckerman, that's a show.
I like this story.
Yeah. You like that story? No, Why do you like that story?
It's just charming and romantic.
Yeah. It's honest. That's why you like it.
Yes.
I'm playing some more Hotel California to play us out.
His death.
That was a fine show.
It was really good. Thank you, guys.
You did most of the talking, which I appreciate.
Well, it's a Sunday. You've had a busy Sunday.
Ah, she talked. I knew she would talk. Ah, I got her. At her. You're kidding.
That's fine, miss.
What is your friend's name?
Mylani.
Mylani. Thank you for coming, Mylani, and sitting with us. Did we do a good show? You can give her the mic and she can answer.
Did we do a good show?
Did you like it?
I love the show.
Oh.
And yes, if you know Justin, he is always the one doing most of the talking.
He is. I can tell. I was looking at your face as he was going in and I watched the yawns. Oh. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never
leave. Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio, brought to you by Hangar 56. Listen to new episodes every Wednesday, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.